Twice a week, Van Lathan and Rachel Lindsay dissect the biggest topics in Black culture, politics, and sports on their show, Higher Learning. They discuss the most important and timely conversations while also frequently inviting guests on the podcast and occasionally debating each other. Check out Higher Learning on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. All right, it's official. I think I've discovered the ultimate coupling of all time. Like any good relationship, they really balance each other out. One is super sweet, and the other, well, they can be a little nutty sometimes. It is, of course, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. So perfect, some would call it true love. Find Reese's now at a store near you. This episode is brought to you by eBay Authenticity Guarantee. eBay knows that when it comes to jewelry, authenticity is the real gem. When you see the blue check mark that says Authenticity Guarantee, it means your next piece will be carefully inspired by jewelry experts and will always be worth its weight in gold. Whether you're looking to make a statement or build the perfect everyday look, eBay is making sure you get the real deal. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that jaw-dropping piece will always arrive jaw-droppingly real. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Any red flag that you want to know? Yeah, I'll tell you. I'll tell you any secret that I've ever had. There's people who I've let on. I went on a date like the week before I left. Because, like I said, I came in just not knowing.
Welcome to Bachelor Party. It is week three. I'm Juliette Littman. I am joined today by documentary filmmaker Penny Lane. Penny, welcome to the podcast. So great to have you.
Hello. That was my attempt to do Katie's hello. How did I do?
Oh my God.
Hello.
Katie's unique. I don't say that. I feel like when you say someone's unique, it's like a kind of like a backhanded compliment. I don't mean it that way. I like to be one of one. Like I feel like I like to find ways in which I could be
different. Couldn't agree more. Yeah, totally. So like, I don't relate to people who want to be like everyone else.
Exactly. I feel like there's a lot of uniqueness to Katie as the Bachelorette that I felt like was really on display in this episode. We could talk about it in a second. We are going to start by talking about Rachel Lindsay's cover story in New York Magazine. But even before that, Penny, how did you get into watching The Bachelor? You're a documentary filmmaker. This is about as far away from documentary as can be while still remaining quote unquote unscripted. From your professional eyes, why is this an interesting show to you?
I'm interested exactly because of what you just said. Like, I feel like in the documentary world, people are like really snobby about reality TV. Mm. It's like our like cousin that we don't like to invite to dinner or something. But for me, I love it. I'm just like kind of constant. Like I watch it. I always watch every episode at least twice, like even not just like to prepare for your podcast. Like I always watch every episode twice because the first time you watch it, you're just like, oh, the story. And then the second time you watch it, you're like, oh, the craft. Like, what are they doing? Like, how is this put together? You can like start seeing the Frankenbites and like thinking about like, wait a minute, like obviously production put them up to this and, you know.
Sure.
And so I love that part of it. I love just like trying to figure out what's going on. And I feel like the theme of the show is that they're trying to figure out what's going on. Like they're just constantly in a state of like chaos and terror, like the right reasons, like who's here for the right reasons? Ah, like everyone's freaking out all the time. And I think that's so fun to watch. Like, I feel like that's what my life is like. So it's very relatable.
They get stripped of their vocabulary when they go into the show. It's like some kind of like Men in Black tool where they lose like half the words they've known for their whole lives. And they have to say right reasons a certain number of times. And I think that Thomas said, I don't want to be disingenuous with you guys. And like, good try. Not the word. Good try.
But like you've heard the word disingenuous 10,000 times on The Bachelor.
I know. It's like, guys.
Vocabulary gets stripped away, but then they get like a new vocabulary. Like,
totally.
It's remarkable.
It's almost like a really effective cult where it's like you enter their turf and like everything changes. I think if you read Rachel's story today, it becomes clear that like it really is this sort of experience that just sort of strips you of your sense of normality and normalcy. And that was really evident. And you know, it was, so Rachel wrote a first person piece sort of about her whole experience on The Bachelor. I thought one thing that was really cool about it was that it was all about her experience. It was very clear that she wanted to speak for herself and for no one else, and she wasn't trying to explain the whole franchise and the history of it, but really just how she got to the place she's currently at, which is no longer hosting Bachelor Happy Hour and very frustrated with the show in the wake of everything that she pointed out. And I thought it was really good article because it, for many reasons, Rachel is that, you know, I don't just say this because she's a colleague and a friend, but she honestly is an inspiration. Like, she is a leader in such a natural way. And it's like kind of breathtaking to watch how she functions with so much class and so much, like, they're just always making so many savvy,
totally,
smart moves.
It's totally. Like,
it's Kris Jenner-esque, I want to say. But
she is.
But way better.
Yeah. Yeah, for real. Only like less ethically challenging.
I mean, it's actually on the other, it's the same level
on the other side.
Same level of savvy, but with all of the ethics instead of none
yes,
of them. And there's
exactly.
There's no product being pushed. Like,
for sure.
There's no lip kit to go buy now to like help, you know, conquer whatever. So
Now that you say that, I would buy Rachel's lip kit. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there.
In the pictures. She looks amazing. I thought it was a really good piece. Did anything in it surprise you just about the process of how they make the show, to your earlier point?
I haven't, so I have to say, I haven't finished reading it. I've only read like maybe about half of it before we had to hop
all
on
good.
To this call. But yeah, from what I read, I thought it was so fascinating to hear her talk about how she ended up on the show. And that she'd never watched the show. And she just had this sense that a lot of my Black friends say, which is that the show was just kind of just like not for them in a very basic way. And so it kind of just like was existing in the world out there, but not something that they paid much attention to or ever really thought about. So hearing about someone go from that position to being a lead is pretty remarkable. And I was really moved when she talked about, you know, watching a season to learn about the show. And she watched Ben's season.
Yes.
And she talked about
Jubilee.
And I remember, like, I will never pretend that I could have watched it the way Rachel felt when she was watching it. But like, I was so horrified by the way that Jubilee was treated on that franchise.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It was horrifying at the time. And it's like, it was horrifying upon second watch. And it's horrifying now. And she talked about watching that and crying. And I thought that the fact that she had that experience and again, like continued to like think, okay, like I'm going to be part of this. And, you know, what can I do from being part of the cast? I thought it was really incredible. What did you think?
I think, you know, Rachel is just such an impressive, impressive person. And,
she's way too good for the show way.
She's doing something that really no one else has been able to do, which is to take the platform, use it for a bigger message, and also build her career. Like, she's sort of like an incredible professional role model. Like, you know, she was sick of being a lawyer, so she used this opportunity to pivot into media and broadcasting, where she's flourishing. And in the meantime, she has become like a really outspoken and important moral and ethical voice. And she's just like, it's incredibly impressive. And I was just glad that she got the space to tell her story. I think, like,
totally,
you know, obviously we're podcasting, and I think Higher Learning, her show, which is on the Ringer Network, obviously is really awesome. And they had a really great conversation last week about In the Heights, about how you can critique the film and the problems of colorism in the film while also thinking it's really important. And they had a great guest on named Angie, who's an Afro-Latina woman, Dominican community organizer in the Washington Heights. And she spoke about like why everyone should go see the movie while also explaining what this controversy is and why it's a problem. And that's why podcasting is awesome, right? Because you can like have those nuanced conversations that's impossible in most of the ways people converse these days, namely on social media, which I despise myself.
Totally. And also, like, no one could have ever seen podcasting coming, like, not to like go on a side tangent here, but like, who knew that there was this hunger for like these incredibly long form conversations about like The Bachelor? Like, I listened to like 10 podcasts about The Bachelor like every week.
Nice.
I didn't know that I had that desire until that opportunity was given to me. And so, yeah, it enables a kind of dialogue that I think is just so amazing.
Yeah.
So super cool.
Yeah. But then on the other hand, reading Rachel's first person account and just like sitting with it with yourself is so powerful. And I thought that was awesome. And shout out to print journalism for that reason. I will say, Rachel posted on her Instagram that she worked really closely with the magazine, and I believe the writer Allison P. Davis, who's done some really, really great work for New York Mag as well. But she was really dismayed at the print headline, which is, "Oops, I blew up The Bachelor." And then she posted on her Instagram that she was really dismayed by it. And now online, the headline is, "Rachel Lindsay has no roses left to burn." So they changed it for digital, but not for print. And, you know, it sucks when that happens. Talk about burn. I mean, like, if she's pissed about that and she put so much care into the piece, it sucks.
It does. And it's also, it's like another like layer in her life experience of like interacting with these like platforms, if you want to call them that, you know, and like there's such an interesting exchange that goes on. And that's something else that I think is interesting about watching reality TV in general, is just like watching people kind of like give their life stories to the producers of these shows. Most of them, I think, know that the shows have their own agenda. Yeah. Sometimes I'm not sure. Okay. Occasionally I'm like, not sure this person really understands what's going on. But most of the time, I think that like there's a kind of exchange going on, and there's such an incredible balance between like what you get from that and what you've given and like how you get treated. And it feels like, from what I've seen over the years, it can go real bad if you real become bad. A reality TV contestant.
Real
and
bad.
And it can go pretty good, but even in the pretty good sense, like you're sort of, you know, giving up something pretty major to get what you get out of it. There's a reason I would never be on reality TV. It's not just that I'm like too old now and too overweight.
Oh yeah. For me, it's mainly like the judgment that I have of everyone and of myself every day is so enormous. How could I possibly survive like the real world? I mean, how could I survive that openly? Which reminds me, something you just said, I've been veering into Housewives territory a lot on this podcast. I just can't help it. I'm in so deep right now because I'm OC and Beverly Hills. I mean, New York and Beverly Hills are on, and I'm catching up with Potomac. And one thing that's so wonderful about watching Potomac is watching Gisele Bryant just like work in tandem with the cameras. She is literally working it. Like, she is getting something out of it while she's giving them something. And it's like it's a master class.
It's really fun to watch when it's so going fun. Well. Yes. Like, I'm like, this is awesome.
Benefit. Mutual benefit. It's great. And then you go watch New York and you're just like, Leah, maybe don't be on TV. Ramona and Luann, definitely don't be on TV. It's just like, it's just too much. So it can just get very bleak very quickly. This episode is brought to you by Priceline. When it comes to travel, we all have that happy place, whether it's the beach, ski slopes, couples getaway, or even a visit to that best friend you haven't seen in way too long. And Priceline wants to get you there for a happy price, so you never have to miss a trip. For me, my happy place is in the Mediterranean. I think I've mentioned that. Maybe it's why I like Love Island so much, because they're right by the Mediterranean. But I just love the feeling of being in the sea, and it's just a great sea. And now, thanks to Priceline's VIP family feature, you can go to your happy place more often while earning deals up to 5 times faster with a group. When one person from the squad travels, everyone gets more deals. And you even get to choose your crew. It doesn't have to be your actual family. It could be your neighbor, your roommate, your mailman, anyone. The more you travel, the more you save. And for me, I'd love to go on a trip to the Mediterranean with friends. In fact, I might be doing that in the near future. I have done it before, and it was really some of the most fun I've ever had. I went to Sicily. We had some great swimming there, me and my friends. Anyway, if you want to have a similar experience, download the Priceline app today to save up to 60% off select hotels and go to your happy price with Priceline. This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. All right, it's official. I think I've discovered the ultimate coupling of all time. Like any good relationship, they really balance each other out. One is super sweet and the other, well, they can be a little nutty sometimes. It is, of course, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. So perfect, some would call it true love. Find Reese's now at a store near you. This episode is brought to you by eBay Authenticity Guarantee. eBay knows that when it comes to jewelry, authenticity is the real gem. When you see the blue check mark that says Authenticity Guarantee, it means your next piece will be carefully inspired by jewelry experts and will always be worth its weight in gold. Whether you're looking to make a statement or build the perfect everyday look, eBay is making sure you get the real deal. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that jaw-dropping piece will always arrive jaw-droppingly real. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. Let's move on and talk about Katie's season or this episode, which we've not done so far. Let's talk about Katie first. So when I said she was unique.
Hello. I can't do it. Hello. What is she doing with her mouth?
It's really weird. This was just really a bizarre episode. It was so poorly put together, I thought. I mean, that's, you know, offensive to the people who made the episode. So there's no way of walking that back. But I just thought it was really weird. The pacing was strange. Before we started recording, I was like, what was the third date? And then I realized there was only two dates and one 20-minute rose ceremony at the top of the episode. No, thank you. I don't like that structure. Did that stick out to you?
I loved the structure of this episode.
Really?
I thought it was like everything I want from an episode. I thought it was perfect.
Why? Yeah. Tell me more.
Because there's like a little story structure in the episode. Like there's the whole story of how the men get together to like get rid of Carl, which we'll talk about because that was amazing. And then like it ends on a cliffhanger, which is like, are they going to be able to do that again with Thomas? And I was like, I actually genuinely want to know the answer to that question. And I don't usually end an episode of The Bachelor like, what's going to happen? But I thought it was great. I also just like loved these dates. But I get that they're like, they're so limited in what they can do, like in this particular filming environment. And yes, I do miss like going to Thailand.
Travel.
Like I'm starting to really feel it. Like, it's just really missing. And
I know.
It's kind of obvious.
I saw on Twitter this morning that American Airlines was canceling like tons of flights because of labor shortage and parts shortage. And I was like, are we ever going to be able to go anywhere again? Anyway, I agree with you. So you like these dates. We have to talk about the, like, the Trauma Fest 2K21 that they started.
Obsessed.
With.
Obsessed with that date.
Oh my God.
With the way it was filmed, like obsessed with like the weird, like black room with like a single, like interrogation style light hanging in the middle.
It was
great.
Like the music video version of an AA meeting for some like YouTube cover artist who couldn't afford a higher production budget. And it was pretty insane. I mean, the like, if you were to make like a sine wave of this, of the admissions, the highs and the lows were so far apart. I mean, on a serious note, I just want to start with Katie's story, which is Katie doesn't use this language, so I'm hesitant to use it. But I interpreted her story as one of being raped. She said that she had a sexual encounter, which there was not consent. And it's incredibly difficult to share that. She said her mom didn't even know. And so she had shared on the show. I presume she would talk to her mom about it before she saw it on TV. But I think people need to hear those stories. So I really commend her for sharing it. And I hope it was a comfortable and safe way for her to share that story. So thank you, Katie. I mean, but then you just think about Thomas, who is like, I'll tell you all my red flags. And we're like, Thomas, you have so many red flags. What are they?
So this is what I was saying earlier about watching it a second time.
Yeah.
Like, he was clearly talking for a very long time. And so I couldn't tell how much of the complete chaos of what he was saying was constructed and how much of it was just like, he's just like, chaos is exiting his mouth in a totally random order, apparently. But like, nothing he said made any sense. It was just like, blah, 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 blah. It was insane. Totally insane.
That's a big part of the season
also,
so far.
I loved how like Aaron, did Aaron describe him as being like, he kept smiling like the clown from It?
Yeah.
Which like, I thought was like, Aaron was the best narrator of this episode by far. He was so funny.
I'm high on Aaron.
I am too. And I just want to say, like, I didn't start there. Like, I was like, okay, this guy, you know, he's like a handsome meathead, not my guy. But this is one of my favorite things that happens in the show sometimes is that people surprise you just like they do in real life. And I was like, oh, Aaron's like a smart guy. Like, he's smart. He's like sensitive. He's savvy. He's like good at being on TV. Like, I'm not all pro Aaron now.
I agree with that. I was like, oh, there's more to him than I thought. Like, he has sweetness to him that I now understand why last week or whenever it was, she went to him to like try to get the real story of like what was going on with Carl. I mean,
agreed. In retrospect,
now I totally
that makes
get
more
it.
Sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's so little explanation of the drama. Like, we don't know why people don't like Thomas, except for the fact that maybe he mentioned being the Bachelor. But like, what are his other red flags? Like, is he a cheater?
No, it's totally unclear.
Has
like,
he
totally
never had a relationship?
Unclear.
Like, I don't know. I was like, Thomas, just please Tell us more.
It's like, that's why I think he's so, it's so funny how like, we have to talk about Carl, but like once the, Carl has been dispatched, they just immediately pivot to Thomas being the villain. But like with Carl, the problems were very, very clear.
Very clear. Very clear.
And Thomas is like a different story. Like, I don't understand what's going on with Thomas at all.
Me neither. Literally. just like, what do we know about him? He's from outside of San Diego. He's in real estate. But I discussed this with Callie last week. Like, being in real estate can mean so many things. So, like, I need to see some documentation. Like, what's your license actually in?
Don't you just wish they talked more about their jobs? That's, like, all
you,
I want.
Penny, you
like,
know that I do. You know that I do. I want to hear all the professional details, how they got into it. I just, every person I know, I want to know about your career.
Also because like, I'm sorry, but that's like how we actually talk to each other on dates, right? Like I've been on a million first dates. Like that's what we talk about. We talk about our jobs. Like I'm so curious to hear them talk about their work.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's why when like Dr. Joe was on, I was like, don't
doctor
go to paradise.
What?
Just
What's
be a doctor.
On?
Yeah, like let's talk. And then when he came on this pod, I immediately went into like the COVID zone of like, what was it like as an anesthesiologist in Brooklyn in March 2020? It was a downer, but I really want to know about it. Like that's the kind of stuff that's actually interesting. And it's like, Thomas, are you looking to start your own brokerage? Are you looking to go to the other side and get into construction? Like, why did you want to get into real estate? Like,
they must be having those conversations. I'm positive
I'm sure
they're having
are.
Those conversations.
I'm
you think
not
they
sure
like
that,
steer them away from it or something?
Well, you made a good point about this being like a big first date topic. I completely agree. But I do think there's some stigma against like overly discussing work and education, which is ridiculous because they're so central to like who you are and your experience or whatever. Not the totality of it. But I do think that there's like a, like some kind of like, I don't know, like snobbishness to it. I don't know.
No, I think you're right. I think I'm thinking about me and my world and like me and my world and my social environment. Like people's jobs are like a huge part of their identity. Mm-hmm. And that's not true for everybody. That's not true for like my brothers and their friends, you know, like they go to work and they come home. And if you ask them to tell you about themselves, they probably wouldn't start with their job. So maybe it's just me.
I don't think it is just you, but I do think that there is like some people who that is not the center of like what they're looking for. But I don't know.
Particularly, let's assume particularly people who are willing to like leave that career for an unknown amount of time to be on this show / become an influencer.
Yeah.
Like instead.
I think it's now safe to assume that people who have like the sort of like stereotypical, like quote unquote good careers don't like them. And that's why they go on the show. Cause that was clear from Rachel. She was like,
one of the interesting things I read in her piece. That was,
she was
really
like,
interesting to
I'm
me.
I'm 31. I've achieved my career.
Cause I
goals.
Had wondered about that. I was like, why would she leave this to do this? And it's like, oh, because she didn't want to do it.
Yeah. She wasn't right, satisfied. Which is interesting. Mm-hmm. But that's another reason why they should talk about it. And it's like, Ivan, you work in like the space industry. That's awesome. Like, why don't you talk about why you're here? You already have 3-day weekends. Sounds like you got a great life going on. So, you know, like stuff like that. Actually, this reminds me of something that I want to go back to with Katie. I don't know if this occurred to you, but having her share her story about lack of consent and then having her be positioned as like the sex positive person, it's like, makes me a little bit uncomfortable because why does she have to be defined by her sexual? I mean, unless she wants that and she's okay with it. But I do wonder if that is a good way to present yourself when you have that kind of trauma. And I don't mean that, like, I'm not trying to, like, judge her or anyone for it.
Yeah, of course.
It kind of reminds me of the Mike thing last week, too, where it's like, why put the virgin in this scenario to talk about his sexual experience? And you know, maybe Katie's completely comfortable with it and this is part of how she's moved on. But I did think, like, these sort of seem, you know, opposed in some way.
I know what you mean, but I feel like what I got from her sharing that story beyond her like incredible courage in doing it was that she said that there was a period of time where she was very uncomfortable with sex and like that was a big problem in her life. And so I see it as like she's like embracing her sexuality now as like almost for herself a way of seeing how much she's healed.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a good point. So it's like an empowering way of approaching it.
And
really.
It also makes me more interested. I mean, okay, I have not... I don't feel the sexiness with Katie at all.
Like, I was going to say that. She doesn't
I was thinking
have
about, like, Like Hannah Brown was like horny. Yeah. Like she was like, hello, like I am going to straddle everyone. Like I like really got it from her in a way that was almost a little too much, actually. But I don't get that with Katie. We just get this weird making out where like their heads are like bashing against each other in an awkward way. The it making is like, out is weird.
It's like a collision every time when she makes out with someone. I felt the same way. I feel like she doesn't have a sexual connection with any of these guys, really. Maybe except for Greg. Greg might be the only one, but I can't even really remember their makeout. Maybe that's why. Yeah. I don't know. Greg is weird, though. When he went to comfort her when she was upset about Carl, he once again did not touch her. It's like, okay, it's nice that you're there, but like, give her a hug. Put your arm around her shoulder. I would feel rejected by Greg. I would be like, oh, you just want to be my friend because you're just here like emotionally, which is very sweet. But like, if we're here to like see if there's a connection, could you like touch me?
This is what I'm saying. Like, there's not a lot of touching. Like, there's not a lot of like sexiness or sensuality or like touching or even in the kissing feels awkward. So look, they're on camera. Yeah. Like, how would I kiss on camera? I'm going to assume really bad, right? Like,
hope to never know.
Also hope to never know, but like pretty sure it'd be horrible and it would be the worst experience of my life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So hard to judge them for their kissing, but I haven't seen making out this bad since Colton's season. Like right. Colton's season was the last time I saw this much terrible, terrible making out. Let's see if it gets better.
It might. I also think that she just has a different vibe about her. There's just something about her that is different, and maybe it's the circumstance. Maybe it's because like, back behind the scenes, things are so different without Chris. Maybe it's because of this pandemic. I mean, who knows? There's just a really different feeling to this season. Like, I was hoping for some like return of frivolity. I think we got that from Tayshia, which was pretty nice. While also having some like really serious conversations. So, like, I thought that worked out well. But there's just something weird about this. It almost feels like the Bizarro Bachelorette. I can't put my finger on it yet.
Interesting. Yeah, I think also like the lack of Chris Harrison and the presence of Tayshia and Caitlin is very different. Like feeling like she's surrounded by like her girlfriends is a very different feeling. And like, I think in a good way, it doesn't replace a host. It's like a different thing.
I think Caitlin,
but I kind of like it.
Caitlin has like a particularly good energy for it. She said something tonight that was like there, I forget what it was, but it was like really good advice and she was like firm and I was like, I'd love to have Caitlin in my corner.
I know exactly what you're talking about. It was when the, like, we got to talk about that rose ceremony, but when is it Mike P? Is that the virgin guy?
Yeah, I think so.
Mike, when Mike P is like, we've decided as a group that Carl's got to go. She went and talked to Caitlin and Tayshia and Caitlin said, this is your choice. Right. And I was like, again, like, oh, right. Like, clearly the producers wanted to keep Carl because like he was really delivering. I mean, Carl was like Victoria. Like he was just like, I'm a chaos machine, which is there's nothing better in reality television than like a pure chaos machine.
That's a really great point, Penny. That's why I'm glad you're here because you're the filmmaker because I heard that Blake came early. I heard that Blake was already there by the time the group date from tonight happened. And so they haven't shown it yet. So they're showing stuff kind of out of order, I think. And I bet when Carl left, there was like a panic over like, what will the drama be? And so they spaced out like the Carl chapter from the Blake chapter to save like the different phases of drama.
Makes sense because Carl was so like, that guy, remember like last week, he's screaming about the Hunger Games and he's like, ask not what you can do for your bachelorette. Like it was the most confusing, insane stuff I've ever seen. And I was like way into it. So they get rid of Carl and I was like, okay, I've never seen this. Have we ever seen this before? Where like there's someone that clearly production wants to keep. Katie says, I was intending to keep Carl. She's not keeping Carl because she wants to marry Carl. I think that's pretty safe to say.
Definitely not.
She says, I was intending to keep him. And then Mike P like announces to her in a very like,
I liked it. Case.
I thought it was amazing. Guard I was
to protect
blown away.
Your heart. Chris, I remember Katie.
Yes, Casey. I was just going to say Casey. Guard and protect your heart. It was like a totally amazing guard and protect your heart moment.
I loved it.
But Mike, instead of it just being Mike, it was like they decided as a group, like in solidarity, yeah. like as a group, that Carl had to go. And she was flabbergasted. It was clear that she didn't know what to do. And I thought, this is new. Like, this is a new thing.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely.
That, like, I loved it. People have figured out they can do. And yes. I was like, ooh, this is exciting. So that's why I left the episode really excited, because I was like, they're going to try to do the same thing with Michael, right? That's his name?
Yeah.
I got to learn these names better, Julia. I'm not professional like you.
I wish I wasn't sometimes.
They're going to try to do it with Mike, but I think it's going to fail because, unlike Carl, Katie likes Mike. She's just, oh, sorry, Mike, Thomas.
Thomas. Okay. Michael is the newly hot single dad that we'll come back to.
He's the hot single dad. Yeah. Yes. Sorry. The names are all the same.
Did you look at Michael's Instagram?
I actually heard you suggest that one should do that, and yes. I did.
Isn't he so much hotter with the beard?
He looks really good with that beard. And then it also made me think he was hotter without the beard. Like, yes, he's just like absolutely. Way hotter to me now than he's ever been before.
You can see his potential, and so you can't unsee it, basically. Yeah, anyway, exactly. they're gonna try to get rid of Thomas. But back to Mike's speech, and you're so right. It was like the rise of the machines. It was sort of like on Westworld when the host became sentient, you know? And they might not be coming back from this, because this is actually like sort of the precursor to this, and like way more important was the women of Matt's season all banding together to post the Instagram to support Rachel.
And, exactly.
And that carried a lot of real world weight. And now
totally.
Within the confines of the show, the men are like, well, we'll band together and get rid of this guy who we all hate, who's ruining our time. And it was a really smart move. And I really liked Mike as the person nominated to speak. I thought he did a great job. He's got real stage presence, that Mike.
He is so much more interesting than I thought he was going to be. I agree. Love him. I think he's great. The way he handled himself on that, like the room with the weird sex stuff date.
Yeah, he handled it great. I was just worried it would be like another like Colton or Ashley I, but he actually has so much more depth to him. I actually think Ashley has a lot of depth too, but at least the way he's being presented, not to judge their character, but as characters of the TV show, not character in real life, I'm like, oh, they're actually giving him much more than I was expecting. And that was an awesome move. And just seeing all of the men shake their heads behind him, like in an agreement, was like out of a movie.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Like, I love that you called it Rise of the Machines, because that's part of what I think I've been seeing since social media basically came into the picture. The contestants, I never know what word to use.
Contestants, cast members. I don't really know either. It's just a bizarre dystopia. Who knows what to call them?
I know. It's like such a weird, like, what is this? But yeah, the characters, the players, the contestants, like, they have more agency in relationship to production now than they did in a pre-social media world.
Like, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Like, Rachel getting on Instagram and saying, like, I didn't like that headline. It's not a Bachelor thing, but it shows exactly what I'm saying. Like, you can, like, actually have some pushback. Like, you could yourself, especially once you've gotten your, like, big Instagram following from being on The Bachelor for a while, you can push back in ways that are really powerful. And we saw that with last year with the racial reckoning.
Yeah.
Like, not just the fans. I don't know how much the fans mattered to the franchise. I have no idea, and we'll never know. But I think the players getting on social media and putting out statements like that was hugely impactful on their decision to get rid of Chris Harrison.
I mean, definitely.
It was amazing to watch, and it changes the game. Like, yes, it changes it the power dynamics here in a really interesting way.
Yeah, that's a really great point, because they're the contestants are not only influencing not just using the platform to like make money, but also influencing outcomes of production, which is a really big deal. I mean, I think most reality shows are built on the premise that like production will always have complete control. And I think they try to get rid of people when that changes, as far as I can tell. But there's so many Bachelor alums and there's so many people with the platform that they actually have a lot more power than, like, for example, you know, Housewives, when there's so many fewer of them and just like the type of fame is really different.
Totally. And I have to believe that, like, they see that happening on social media, and maybe it gives them the idea that, like, oh, we can do that on set. Like, yeah. There's no reason that we can't unionize and, like, kind of create different outcomes. And I think that people are so much smarter now about how reality TV is made. I think so much about this. Like, I watched season one of The Bachelor again recently.
And I was just like, boring.
It was boring, first of all. But also, like, no one knew why they were there. Like, it was just like a weird experience. Like, no one was there because they thought they were going to get famous. Like, they didn't know what they wanted out of it, you know?
Totally.
And now I feel like I see like a bunch of reasons why they might be there. And we all understand what those reasons are, including finding love, by the way. I'm not cynical about that. I think that like
I don't think, actually.
I might fall in love. I hate when people are just like, oh, they're all there. I'm like, of course they're all there to like get famous in addition to, but they all think it'd be really fun if like this was their love story. Like that's what they all have in common. They think that's a great love story.
Yeah, they think it's a great love story. And also like, it also indicates to me that you have some personality traits that are compatible because you're all willing to go on television. Like you're all willing to let this play out. I've said this before, but I think like most people go on reality TV have like an exhibitionist streak in them. And when you find it in other people, you go with it. It's sort of like why dating apps work. It's because you like both parties approach it from the same premise. So like, I'm looking to make this work. Or I'm just looking for X. Like when you find a match, it's because you have the same goal. It's not because like dating apps are magic, but it just sort of like establishes a baseline in a different way. And The Bachelor is no different. It's like, I came here looking for love. I accept that you will be making out with tons of people and hopefully it'll be me. And if it's not, no hard feelings, that's the game.
Also, like I also like to spend 5 hours a day at the gym.
Yeah, exactly. I know, exactly. Seriously. It's like a type of person. And that's when they deviate from that type. It's like so usually very exciting. You're like, oh my God, who's this real human? Great, great stuff. And that leads us to Michael, who got the one-on-one this week, who is the single dad from Ohio. We learned his backstory this week, which I think you could glean from social, but Michael has a son with, and he is a widower. His wife, 7 months after giving birth, was diagnosed with breast cancer and she passed away. They met in college. It seems like she was really his main relationship of his life. It's a pretty tragic and beautiful story. And he seems like he probably just needed a break from whatever he was doing. Being a single dad in the pandemic must be incredibly challenging. So, I mean, what's not to like about Michael?
Oh, and he had the best line. What was the line? It was like,
doesn't end with an engagement, begins with an engagement. That was beautiful. Oh, that's a man who understands a relationship, who's been married.
Absolutely. I think that's so cool because it's true that in the construct of this weird show, like marriage is kind of the goal, right? Like once they get married, there's no reason we'd care about them anymore. But in real life, like, yeah, that's not the end of the story. That's like barely the beginning. So yeah. I thought it was so beautiful that he said that. I also loved the tumbleweed. I don't know how much you noticed the tumbleweed, but when she arrives, he says, she kind of goes, oh, look at that guy. And he's like, yeah, it's been following me around, which again is like him saying like production just keeps throwing this tumbleweed into the frame. That was so great.
The backdrops they're working with are pretty barren and not particularly pretty, but I do think it allows them to like, I don't know, zhuzh it up if they do it right.
Can you remind me where they are? I'm very confused about the geography of this place.
They're in New Mexico. I think like near Albuquerque. I've never been to New Mexico. I've never been to the desert.
But it's like really cold? I thought it was hot there. I'm so confused.
I think at night it's really cold. I think it's like mountains, like how it, you know, it's like, have you ever been to like Tahoe? That's kind of like my best frame of reference where it's like 20 degrees at night and like 65 degrees while you're skiing. Not that I've ever been skiing, but that's what I've heard. So I have been there. I've seen these weather variations, but not to ski. So I think that's what's going on. And then like Arizona in winter is like that too, where it's like, you're so hot if you leave the house and, you know, like a sweatshirt by lunchtime. But then in the morning, it was like really cold and there's frost. I don't know. It's just extreme weather is not for me. I'm extremely coastal. Like I need to know that I could be near the water. And also like, I'd prefer my extreme weather to be a hurricane, not like 60 degree variation in temperatures during the day. So that's just me.
God, I'm glad to know that about you, Julia.
Yeah, so. she just wanted you to let you know. But yeah, I thought that Katie seems really moved by Michael and likes him. I also thought she looked completely bewildered when he was telling her his story. I just thought that she seemed, I don't know if you caught that, but I was like,
I thought so too. And I thought that's so relatable though.
Like, absolutely.
I think she even says it, like it's hard to like live up to that image in your mind of this person.
Totally. Also,
which is...
contemplating being a stepmom must be incredibly bewildering when you're 30 and you're just like figuring things out. It must be like really overwhelming. But that's one of the things that makes her unique, back to the earlier comments. Like, she doesn't play it straight on her face. She does not have a poker face so far. Like, she either is really bored, she's really titillated, or really bewildered. Those are like the three faces I've seen. And with Greg, it's a little bit more mild. That's why I think he wins. But otherwise, yeah, just seems like she sort of has a lot of extreme emotions, which, again, very relatable.
Very relatable. She really, I mean, it sounds like a dumb thing to say, but I really feel like she just seems like a normal person.
Yeah, no, like, I agree with you. Because also, like, when you do meet someone and it's like exciting at the beginning, you're like, wow, I think I could actually like this person. It is also kind of bewildering. You're like, fuck, I could really like this person. And then if they have, you know, this trauma that they're coming out of, like, I think it's okay to acknowledge trauma without calling it like baggage or whatever, which I think happens on the show very often with the single parents. I mean, that's a lot. You got to work through that.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I wish the show had? I don't support this in general, but I really wish they had an on-screen therapist that was like, just not, in addition to confessionals, it was like they did some like therapy sessions in each week. Like,
you didn't think Nick Viall was a sufficient therapist for that incredibly intense trauma session?
The trauma date is becoming a fixture of the show, and it's a problem. I do not. They happened last time with The Bachelorette with Tayshia. It doesn't happen with the women as much. But with the men, I think that like they don't know how to get them to be emotional without like making them delve into their most traumatic experiences.
It was like a big thing with Claire.
Yes.
Remember? It was like,
yes,
Claire, so was
that
just
painting,
like,
date. Yes. And like to hear Connor B, cat guy, be like, here are the times that I got too wasted and cheated. And it's like, dude, it's okay. You don't need to tell a big group of people like that. It's not good, but it happens. We get it. And then, you know, my father had a stroke. And then it's just, they all end up trying to like one up each other, except for Thomas. And it's just like, it's becoming like a weird trope of the show that like to open up is to share your deepest trauma. And like, just wait for like date number 10 for that. Like, does it have to happen right away?
I feel like that's always been a trope of the show. Like the sort of the idea that like to be vulnerable is to tell a sad story about your life.
Yeah.
Isn't that like always what they've wanted out of people? It's like kind of very consistent in my mind.
I think that they don't used to do it in like a group circle though.
Yes, they're forcing it more early. I think that's true. Like this kind of group sharing thing.
And
I'm into it, Juliet. I love it. I think it's great. Because for me, like I'm not so into like the like forced violence dates.
Oh,
like,
me either.
Like I don't like
those. Wrestling.
And so yeah. And so for me, like having that balance out with like a like group therapy date, I think is like super fun.
I think also because they can't introduce other people or because of COVID or go places, like they can't do things like testing people by like making them skydive or sit on the top of a building or they have to like find ways to like push them to like their limits to like cry and be uncomfortable in other ways.
Yes, they have to find ways. Exactly. They have to find ways to totally freak them out and make them crazy or else they're not going to get good TV. So this is actually an improvement, I think, over like where they were at when they were shooting the earlier COVID seasons where they hadn't quite figured this out. They're like more, maybe that's it, Juliet. Maybe it's, maybe we're getting more personal trauma because of COVID because we don't have like
also, we're
Thailand to look at.
And we're
at.
All traumatized. So we're like, let's talk about trauma. I do think that's actually true though. I do think with younger people, there's more of a expectation and comfort of like talking about like mental health and trauma.
Totally.
Like it's way more part of the sort of the vernacular. So I think that that's part of it. Also, the other thing is they don't drink as much as they used to because they limit it. So that also limits not only like drunken confessions, but also just like general sloppiness to show on camera. So
totally. Yeah.
So
I think we've solved this. We've solved this. So we now know.
Yeah. I just like the discrepancy in stories was just so funny to me.
I know. I actually really thought Hunter's story was kind of moving. It was a little subtle, you know, it was kind of subtle. He was like describing how you can fail at your marriage. And like, he seemed really broken up about it, but he also like played it perfectly because he like included the like, here's what I learned from it, and everything happens for a reason. That's how you have to end the trauma story in the show. If you don't do it that way, you're screwed.
That made me like him more, actually. I didn't really think about him. I felt like he was like the throwaway single dad. We were really putting all of our eggs in Michael's basket. But I actually was like, okay, Hunter seems like a good guy. I think she actually has a lot of good guys here.
I agree with you. I'm like into these guys.
Same.
More than usual for me.
Same.
Now, Connor, Cat Connor, though, He was wearing a shirt that was unbuttoned to like his belly button.
Yeah, and that was confusing.
I was not okay with that. I didn't expect that from Kat Connor.
Also, the collar was kind of weird. It was just sort of like, I wasn't sure there were buttons there. It looked like it was like what like you should wear when you're 65 and really rich and in Hawaii. And not Kat Connor on The Bachelorette, but just my two cents.
I also started noticing just this episode that Connor's like resting face is really frowny. Have you noticed? Like his mouth like turns down in like a very sad way when he's not smiling. Pay attention. You'll see it. It's really intense.
I feel like for Kat Connor, you know, clearly he's got the music background. He's also a math teacher. People seem to say he's nice. I feel like he has a maybe the best chance of kind of staying in Bachelor Nation and like getting into like the well zone of popping up as like bartender. I feel like he's so non-threatening and so kind of like, just like, I feel like he's like very malleable. I was going to say squishy, but I mean malleable. But I could, and also Wells was from Nashville too.
The so Wells comparison's really smart. I think that's right. They both played like the kind of nerdy guy, shy, nerdy, charming guy really well.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, that used to be what Nick was. I mean, Nick Viall, of course, has evolved into a sex symbol. But when we first met him, he wasn't. He was kind of a Kat Connor type.
He was Normcore Nick back then. That's what you used to call him on the podcast.
I forgot about that.
He was just Normcore Nick from Wisconsin, and he's come such a long way. I say it with love. I think they had
me too.
I think they had him host that date because it's kind of similar to his podcast where he does like advice and whatnot. Although,
totally,
you know, I would have loved to hear more of Nick's reactions. I feel like that would have been entertaining.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. I would have watched that date for 10 hours. I could have watched that unedited. I want the unedited tape of that date.
It probably went on a really long time.
Exactly. And like, I want to like see it. Like, I want to see the exhaustion set in. I'm so into it.
Maybe it was a setting, but one of the things I wrote in my note was that this date needed ayahuasca. Like, everyone just needed to take it up a notch.
Ayahuasca would be the only way to improve it. Okay, that's next season. So producers,
next season on The Bachelor,
if you're listening. No, because they have this rule about like two drinks per hour. But yeah. I haven't heard any rules about how much ayahuasca you can take on
seriously.
A daily basis.
Yeah. So. And I don't know, as microdosing becomes more popular and more acceptable, perhaps there's ways to work that in for these trauma circles. I don't know. Just throwing it out there. just a couple other stray thoughts, and I'm curious what else really caught your eye, but one other thing I wanted to mention was when the guys were just in the hot tub together, that just made me chuckle. I was just like,
I loved that so much. The boy chat. I loved it.
Boy chat. That'd be a good name for a podcast.
Boy chat. Yeah, totally.
Boy, that was so funny. And also when they were like, no love Katie on the date card, like, come on. They were so incensed about that. It was hilarious.
They were like, it's brutal. She didn't even put a heart, Katie. I was like, wait, is that brutal? Like, what's going on? Like, this is not that big of a deal.
I know. Like, how closely are they studying those date cards usually that they notice that kind of thing? It was really funny.
Juliet, they were like, it ends with a dot, dot, dot. And I was like, okay.
The ellipsis hurled around the world.
But again, in Bachelor Land, what that makes me think of is, do you remember... who was it with the dot, dot, dot? It was it JoJo who was in love with like a bad guy who just kept like...
Oh, yeah. With,
and who was...
Bentley?
Bentley. God, you're so good at the name recall.
Do you want to know
so,
what?
Yeah.
I never forget a face. And when I learned the name,
impressive.
I put them together. I'm a super
so
recognizer.
Impressive.
Thanks.
So yeah, Bentley, when he left, he was like, let's not call it quits. Let's just say it's a dot, dot, dot. And then like... the entire season was Ashley like losing her mind because she's like, dot, dot, dot. It's still a dot, dot, dot. I need a period. Like it just became a punctuation journey from like the dot, dot, dot
sure.
to period. So she might hear dot, dot, dot in The Bachelor. That's what I think about.
Which is like kind of realistic. Like when someone ends a text with a period, you know it's a big deal. You're like, oh, you mean it. Okay. Or like if it's like, lots of periods and then not at the end, you're like, oh, okay, you're trying to like end on a breezy note, you know, like I just feel like that actually is realistic. I mean, you know, you analyze that shit to death, right? So
totally, yeah, again, this is a show about the chaos and terror of dating.
Yeah,
like I think it's so much more relatable than people give it credit for. Like as a person who is dating, mm-hmm. I'm like, Yeah. People when they go on dates with me are not trying to get famous. They usually, I don't think, unless they're delusional. Maybe they think documentary film directors can make them famous, but maybe not.
Probably be for the wrong reasons.
But there are like wrong reasons. And there is that analysis where you're like, what is this person doing? Like, what are they looking for? And are they telling me the truth? And like, you don't know. Like all of that is like really, really unsettling for some period of time.
Yeah, of course. And then for all the highs, there's incredible lows because they have to balance each other out. And you also like, find a person who can have a great time and be like, okay, so what were all the things that are wrong with it? Like, what did I do to mess it up?
Yes. And like the unrealistic expectation that there's like this person who's going to complete you, who's
going to be the perfect.
Yeah. Everything else in my life is perfect. I just need that person. And you're okay, that's a lot to put on a person. But I do that. So I get it. I think it's very relatable.
I think that's also why at the end of the show, when they propose to each other, and I would like them to get rid of the proposing. It's just stupid. There's no reason.
It feels like it's kind of fading out naturally in a funny way.
The biggest loser of that would be Neil Lane. But like picking each other, it's true. Picking each other is really sweet, right? Like that's kind of like, I think all you need. But I also say that as someone who like the institution of marriage, I don't think is that big of a deal. I think, you know, you pick each other. And that's really, really sweet. And I think that when they make the finales it's nice when they do pick each other, even if it's like Colton and Cassie, when they're like, we're going to give this a shot in our own way, because like that sort of like mutual validation, I think is what drives the show and does drive relationships like trying to, you know, it's like scary to be the first one to put it out there. And does that, you know, the guys who come on too strong on the show, they get voted off. It's like too much. It's like, how do you play it? And I think that sort of like, you know, trying to go for the happy ending has become a joke because of the way they like work in Neil Lane and because of the pressure of an engagement, but that's why they don't need it. Like it's just happy when people find each other, you know, like that's like, really sweet.
I think that's true. That would be a good evolution, I think, of the show, just to let go of it. Totally.
Did you watch The Challenge by any chance?
I've never seen The Challenge.
They're such a beautiful couple on The Challenge that like just found each other through the show. And like, I just think they are so sweet. And I'm like, this is how it goes. Like, and then, he's been on the show his name is Leroy. He's been on the show forever. He was on Real World Las Vegas season 25, which I think was in 2010. So he's been in this world for like 11 years. And he's like, okay, I'm retiring now. I'm moving to Houston, opening a barbershop. I live with Cam. We relocated. We're starting our lives together. And I'm like, that's beautiful. That's better than a bachelor engagement. It's so sweet. So I feel like I hope that Katie doesn't get engaged, and I feel like she's not going to. I heard this production was shorter, wasn't the usual 10 weeks, it was like 7 or something like that, and just start dating. That would be great. That's enough.
I agree. I think it's great. It is enough. But I like the threat of the engagement as a way to make it all just very intense and crazy. Yeah. Because that's what we need it to be, very intense and crazy. You can't get rid of all the tension, you know.
Also free ring, that sounds great. I personally love diamonds, so I don't know. Penny Lane, what other reality shows are you watching right now?
Okay, here's what's weird about my relationship with reality TV.
Okay.
I hardly ever watch it as it's airing.
Except for The Bachelor?
Yes, except for The Bachelor. It's the only show that I watch as it's airing. Everything else, I like to wait until there's like a couple seasons built up, and I like to binge it and then probably watch it twice.
Sure.
So I just watched Real Housewives of SLC twice because I was so upset. That is the best.
It's incredible.
Like that cast kills me. Absolutely amazing.
Incredible.
The combination of like the religious angst of a sort that I've never seen in reality TV, like with the housewives thing.
I'm ready for like, you know how like Kim and Nene got spinoffs while they're still doing Atlanta. I want Whitney and Heather to do a Excommunication spinoff while still doing SLC.
Oh,
I'm so interested. Like, I am so fascinated. Whitney, I think, is quietly tragic in this group. And Heather, I find her kind of like revival really fascinating. I totally agree. The religion stuff is
I also
so
really want to know what's going on with Mary, and I don't know. So I would watch a lot more Mary.
I'll send you some YouTube videos so that you can learn a little bit. I learned a lot from like people like in her extended family.
So I also just rewatched Colton's season.
Oh,
because
what do you think now that we know he's gay?
Well, and after the stalking allegations. Yeah. So like there's a lot to like see in news.
So what did you see?
Season. I saw somebody who was like a very calculating person. Mm. Like he talks about this in his book. I mean, he's been very open about this. He thought he could play the game. Like, he thought he was going to, like, play the game better than anyone. And you can, like, see it. You can see the wheels turning in his head in every interaction. Also, the making out's really weird. So then you're like, yeah. But you never, like, later on, wasn't it on Paradise when all the girls were just like, Colton was the worst kisser of all time?
Yes.
I was like, whoa, what did Colton do to this production team that made them hate him so much that they were like, let's have a scene where everyone talks about what a terrible kisser he is? That's brutal.
It was horrible. What he did was he did the interview with This American Life where he revealed a lot of stuff he wasn't supposed to. And so they got back at him by having Sydney and Tayshia and whomever be like, yeah, Colton's the worst kisser ever.
I'd never seen a former lead get disrespected like that.
Yeah, they don't usually do
it. On the show.
They don't usually do
it. That's
intense. It is. It's messed up. It's messed up.
And then, you know, of course, like that fence jump reads real different, right? With all the context to follow. Like, he was like explosively frightening in that moment. And I didn't get that the first time. I was kind of like, oh, he's had it with the show. And now I'm like, oh, I'm like scared watching this scene. Like, I'm afraid of what he could do, actually. It's very different.
That's
much more interesting now. Yeah.
I should go back and watch it, too, because it was clear he was, like, very fed up. And I found, I did an episode with Evan Ross Katz about Colton coming out when it happened back in, I think it was April. And, you know, wish him the best. It seems like he's kind of just going about his life now, which I think is the best move. And, you know, hopefully he has learned from a lot of these episodes. But I just found his whole story depressing because it really highlighted, like, the constraints of, like, the heteronormativity and, like, the fantasy of the show. And while I agree with you, there's a lot of, like, real parallels to dating that kind of make the show fun in ways people don't really like to acknowledge because, like, you watch for it to be, like, crazy and whatever. But it's sort of, like, the absolute extreme of, you said, the terrors of dating. The terrors and also the, like, sublimity of dating as well.
Ooh, that's a nice use of the word sublimity.
Thank
I
you. But I just felt like everything with Colton, the way that he stalked Cassie, the fence jump, and, you know, going up to his coming out, really just highlighted, like, the tyranny of the sort of, like, traditional heteronormative marriage. And I found that sad. And so I almost feel like I personally am trying to, like, dissociate from all of that so I could, like, still have fun with this concept of a show. Because it does seem like, even, you know, obviously Rachel has really been such an important voice on the racial shortcomings of the show, but there are just, like, so many other constructs as well that really are damaging if you fully buy into them. And that's why that's why they should have older people on the show, because they know it. Like, that's why, like, Zach and Tayshia and, like, Rachel and Brian, I feel like they could make it. It's because they're not 26. They've had other relationships. They're, like, aware of a lot of what we're talking about. Like, you have to have dated to make some of this work. I don't know.
Agreed. Yes. That's why, like, most of the time, like, the show reminds me of first dates, like, first couple dates. It doesn't remind me of, like, my long-term relationships. Like, there's not a lot of that going on.
Did you watch Dating Around?
No, Netflix? I've never seen it.
Oh,
no.
My God, Penny. As soon as we finish this podcast, watch it. Season one's really good. You're going to love it. Text me when you watch it. It's one of the best shows of all time. No joke.
Okay, great.
Season one of Dating Around might be, like, the perfect reality dating show. It's so fantastic.
Maybe it's like the Dostoevsky of our time, you think?
Yeah. The other single season perfection that will never be again is Below Deck Sailing Out season two. The reunion's on tonight. I'm not joking. I am not joking. It is so fucking good. It gives you everything you want in a reality TV show. And two of the cast members, one just had a baby and the other is pregnant. And so, and, like, I think a lot of them just, like, aren't going to do this again, but this cast can never be reassembled, and this is just, like, absolute lightning in a bottle. It is, it is true perfection. I'm not overstating it at all.
I love it. And I love your joy in it, because, like, I really get a lot of joy out of watching reality TV, and I really feel like I'm supposed to feel just bad about it, and mm-hmm. it bothers me. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, what is, I mean, like, come on, guy. Like, yeah, I get it. It's like not real. Like, what is this, 2000? Like, yeah, we all know that. Like, calm down. But like, when you see like what people do inside the constraints yeah. of what this thing is, and you see somebody like rocket, like I was very invested in Hannah Brown's journey because like, I was just like, this woman was so afraid of the camera, she couldn't make a toast. Like, she, like, froze and couldn't make a toast. And then seeing her go from that to, like,
the windmill.
Killing it on dance. Yes! And then Dancing on the Stars and all this kind of stuff was, like, really a kind of a joy for me. Like, I was invested in that because that's a real story that I believe in would happen in the real world. You know what I mean? Like, somebody, like, becoming confident in their ability as a performer. I get it. Like, that makes sense to me. I can follow along and buy it and, like, love it.
I think we will look back on The Bachelor and The Bachelorette and all of Bachelor Nation as having peaked with Hannah moving the rose podium in Greece at the final four.
I think that's a very interesting idea. I really think that Hannah Brown's season was like a hinge for something.
It was.
And I don't know what.
It was. Yeah. It was it's been total downhill mess from there. But that was the absolute pinnacle. I, once again, I'm not joking.
I will agree with you, but I also have to say that like in all the stuff that happened last year in the Bachelor franchise, that was a lot more important to talk mm-hmm. about. I still have not fully processed Claire. Mm. I thought that was the most riveting thing I have ever seen on television. I was so riveted by what happened with Claire. Like I was like, oh, this is probably what I would do if I was with the show. Like I was like, oh, I'm the same age as Claire. And like, maybe I have a similar dating history. Maybe I have similar neuroses or like problems or something. But I was just like, this is what would happen to me if I went on the show. I would like go completely insane and decide that I had totally fallen in love night one. And I would be like, okay, gotta go. I would love it. I would love to cause that much drama. Like when Chris Harrison was like, you just broke The Bachelorette. I was jealous. I was like, I want to break The Bachelorette. I don't think that was the best season of all time. I'm just saying Claire's performance there was something very special.
That group of guys is probably the best group of guys of all time. Incredible Final Four, but then also people like Riley and Ed and Bennett. Like, just that was probably the best group of guys of all time. And Tayshia was like a really good lead for that season. She was kind of exactly what they needed. And she and Zach seem really sweet together. I hope it works out for
them.
I really do. I mean,
me too.
He seems like such a great guy, so by all accounts. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is just because I'm older, but I'm like, they should have older people on the show. It's more interesting. Like, it's just,
I agree with you.
They're in their own way, they're messier. Like, they have it's a real mess instead of like Victoria, who's like a fake mess, you know?
I know. Victoria's mess is just that she wears a black bra with like a white wedding dress or something. Like, it's so confusing.
She's all of us. She will one day look back at her pictures from her 20s and be like, what was I thinking wearing that? What an absolute disaster. Yeah. Give me a black t-shirt and high-waisted jeans. I'm good to go. So she will be horrified.
Totally right. But I also think that like having alternating casts, like having a really young cast is really helpful in just pointing out how different the older casts are. So I kind of like having that.
That's true.
Like, who was the youngest cast? Like Pilot Pete's? Like, that was a very young cast.
Yes. Hannah, Anna, and Madison were like 21. Very, very young. But like, I don't know. That was such a mess of a season too. That was kind of entertaining, but it's just so funny. Like, I always will associate the pandemic with Barb, his mom, because the pandemic like really kind of went in full force like the day after that finale. It was like the last live event in Los Angeles. So,
oh my God, you're right.
Yeah. Yes, it was a momentous week. So, Penny Lane, thank you so much for joining me. You'll have to come back. I will be back on Thursday with Callie. I'm sure we'll talk about Below Deck Sailing Yacht because we both love it. More Bachelor. And until then, please check out Rachel's amazing cover story in New York Magazine. Listen to Higher Learning and check out The Bachelor Party Instagram and Twitter for Amelia's recap. And thank you to Kaya McMullen for producing this episode.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.